Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I am Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And we are here for another episode of The Mandalorian Report.
Oh, yeah. Oh, was I supposed to do it?
I was just waiting to see if you would, since last week I thought you would, and then I interrupted you rudely while you were doing it. That was perfect.
We have to work it out where I hum it lightly underneath you.
Yeah. We should try sometime getting helmets and recording maybe our final Mandalorian Report episode, all with that slight helmet ring.
Slight helmet echo.
Slight helmet echo, which you may or may not be hearing. Go behind the scenes of Force Center. Mm. We had an adventure. We're located in a basement amenity room in my apartment building. So if the acoustics are a little bit different, please know we are surrounded by leopard print carpet, a pool table, in an ambiguous red leather sofa.
It's really low to the ground. And an electric dartboard, so we might just start playing.
Yeah.
We might just start playing. But yeah. Hey.
This is our vault, right, where we can record anything we want.
This is, I feel we are walked into a Star Wars bar. We are literally sitting at a bar, actually, while we record. Force Center has come home.
Absolutely classic. Back in one of your old places, you had a bar
That's
we used
right.
to record at in
That's
the early
right.
days. So this is really just going back to the beginning, to the roots. But let's dive into this episode, because we always have a lot to talk about, a lot to say. Let's just start, as we often do, with the title itself.
Yeah.
The Prisoner. Mm. Now, I've been enjoying these titles, because sometimes they're straightforward, and sometimes they're up for interpretation, and this is one that I think is probably straightforward, but I had fun interpreting on multiple levels.
I think you are in the same boat on all the titles, but particularly this one. Pretty straightforward. They're going to get the prisoner. But for me, may I start or you want to start? I don't know.
Go for it. You talk first. Is this how this works? Yeah.
I am really on board because it made me appreciate the episode better once I thought about this. I really think the Mando was the prisoner, and he's breaking free. He's breaking free of his past. Oh, I love when Star Wars has themes.
Yeah, I really took it that way, too. We'll talk about it a little bit, kind of do a deep dive into it when we get to themes. But I felt like some of the other chapters have had kind of multiple things going on, and I felt the main thing going on this is Mando imprisoned by his code, his armor, his past, or not? And I feel like that last beat did feel like breaking free.
Breaking free. I mean, how many times do we hear, like the old days? Like the old days.
Like the old days. At least four times. Yeah. In the old days, they must have said, like in the old days, a lot. Like the old days. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just go to big picture overall reaction. This was the second episode directed by, I wrote it out phonetically, so I'm going to try, Rick Famuyiwa. I need to memorize how to say the man's name correctly out of respect.
Out of respect.
And because, damn, I love his directing.
Yeah.
He also directed The Child.
Yes.
And I think these two episodes are up there for me.
The Child's still my favorite. Not that I need to rank these episodes yet, but But yeah. Rick Famuyiwa.
Excellent.
Right. Out of respect for him as a man, director, and talent, but also his X-Wing flying skills we have to now. But that's
which we
at
will
the end.
Definitely talk about. But what was your overall reaction? Where did it sit among other Mandalorian chapters?
It really did work for me on a second viewing, and that seems to be where I'm going with Mandalorian a lot. Yeah. I have to be honest, like the first three episodes. Even the second episode, which I, saw in an airport while stranded, the second viewing made me appreciate it more. But I wrote that off as well. I was trying to sleep on a backpack and I was watching on the phone. this one, the episode ended and I was like, man, I just don't know what to feel about this show. It's not grabbing me anymore. And then I watched it a second time and had a good discussion with Emma Fife on the Collider show. And I was like, no, this actually is a little bit of a return to form in terms of the storytelling of Mando versus himself in a way, Mando versus his emotions and things in the past. And I was like, okay, I like it. You and I were talking. I don't know how to, it shouldn't factor into a discussion or review. The look of the show has sometimes been a big struggle for me.
Yeah, I think it absolutely can factor in because I think you and I on Force Center try to give an overview, but also ultimately we're Star Wars fans and we all have our own personal reactions. And you've always reacted. I remember going back to Force Awakens and you were worried about the shot of Kylo bringing his saber to Rey. In the actual film, it turned out that she was still kind of frozen, which is why she had that dancing around. But I remember back in the day, you're like, it looks like Looney Tunes. Is this going to be okay? You are sensitive to the CGI.
I am. I also remember I was really not sure of Chewie's fingers.
But those are practical.
Practical.
Those are straight up real Wookiee fingers.
Yes, it is. And it's weird
because a puppet.
Yeah. Obviously the prequels have their issues.
They have some CGI in them, yes.
And sometimes I go back and go,
models.
More than we know, of course. But sometimes I go back and go, oh man, I can see Mace's feet not really hitting the dirt. I don't know why it pulls me out. And I think going into Mandalorian and the idea of live action TV, Star Wars TV, I was like, I made the Babylon 5 joke, which isn't to say the quality of that show's writing was bad, or they're just like a UPN, CW, Saturday night syndicated show that doesn't, and the budget for Mandalorian is big, but we also actually heard it's pretty small, and Favreau didn't get what he asked for. And, I'm not making the comparison to an HBO show,
right,
with their big budget. I sometimes have felt in this particular episode, I felt like I am watching a show with not a lot of money to make it look like a film.
Yeah. I think there's that.
End rant.
Well, I think there's that breakdown, too, between how much we want to disappear into the reality of the show and how much we are so aware of technology. Yeah. And there's been so much discussion of this new CGI room, the vault, right? Is that what
The volume? Which
the
is,
volume.
We're in the vault.
We're
now.
In the volume now. So you're kind of aware of that, which might take one out. I think for me, growing up with Star Wars being like, oh, wow. But then also growing up watching original Star Trek and Doctor Who in particular.
Right.
I have a much larger patience for as long as the actors are reacting realistically in keeping emotional engagement. If the characters feel engaged by the environment, I don't care if it's clearly Teflon that they could, that they will trip and accidentally knock over. Right. If they're looking at it like it is the scariest monster ever, I'm okay. So I think that everybody does just have different levels of coping with looking at the, how is this realized?
Yeah, and I wish I had a little more patience. Part of it, I did discuss this in the other show, and I do think it's an interesting discussion nowadays, because going back to Game of Thrones and The Long Night, or Solo, and the lighting issues, we have two TVs in our house. One is a top-notch. Grace's parents gave her this TV, and then I have mine, which is a nice big TV. It's very nice, but I watched the first viewing on her TV, and it's, I don't even know if it's 4K. I don't know what it is. I'm not a techie guy, but it's, it was so clear. I could see Natalia Tena's makeup lines on her Leku.
Yeah.
And that, and then the second time I was watching it on my TV, and I was like, oh, I can't see that stuff. And it's similar to either you hated The Long Night because it was all pitch black and you didn't see it, or my TV settings happened to be just perfect for that Game of Thrones episode and was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
It does, oddly enough, factor in when you watch things nowadays because of where technology is, including watching it on your phone in an airport.
Yeah. Sometimes it might look better on your phone.
Might look better, or not how Star Wars is designed to be viewed. So that's only why I bring it up. I'm not harping on it. And true, once I watched it the second time, all the story beats and the themes and everything were there for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Interesting. I feel bad about being negative sometimes. We shouldn't. Pretty positive.
We shouldn't. I think we were trying to coin the phrase last time, positively negative.
Yes.
So. But I think it's just fine for you to be honest that is a part of your reaction and your experience to the show. For me, the CGI I don't wrestle with, like I said, unless the characters don't feel like they're engaged in the reality anymore.
Yeah.
What I do feel distracted by is this ongoing question of, what is this show? And it's only something that will, I think, really matter on the first viewing.
Yeah.
Because we have these two chapters left, and I really think these two chapters left are going to come back to the story that we started with.
Yeah.
But I'm just so fascinated by this process of, it was kind of advertised to us is this, these are just going to be the cool adventures of a lone gunfighter making his way in the galaxy. And then we get the first couple episodes, and we're like, no, it's not. Right. It's really deeply about who he is in his surprise relationship with this fascinating new Star Wars character of Baby Yoda. Yeah. And then about halfway through, they're like, actually, we're going to go back to it is just standalone episodes. Yeah. And I don't want to say just standalone episodes, because I think every episode is continuing to tell us more about who he is. But it has this fascinating tension between, let's go back to just serialized adventure. And an adventure can be joyful for the sake of having an adventure versus where is the story going? And it's just fascinating to kind of be in this big group cultural tension and have every episode sort of be like, we all want to like it, but what are you?
It's so funny that, like, for the first couple episodes, it was this online debate of, is it a samurai show or a Western show or a video game show? And then now this past week or two, it's been this debate of, oh, you don't appreciate episodic. I don't want it. Which is silly. It's all silly. But you're right. There is, it is. And then sometimes it gets really funny in a real world way, which works sometimes, doesn't work sometimes. And other times it's deep, sparse dialogue. And so I really enjoyed what they presented in the first three. So I found myself going, oh, I hope they get back. But also I want the plot strings resolved. And I think we're going to get that. So that's going to be more dialogue. So it's you're very right.
Yeah.
It's a weird tension.
I think it's going to be end up being this weird sandwich that has kind of this overarching Baby Yoda story at the beginning and the end.
Right.
And then some adventures in between that let us bond a little bit more with the characters and learn more about Mando.
Yeah.
But sort of looking at it as that, I felt like we got some really fresh and juicy new stuff about the Mandalorian and the state of the galaxy.
Yeah.
And I think I would put this actually is my second favorite after The Child so far. I
like that.
I think because of some of what we got to see the Mando do, and more than anything, all the stuff with the New Republic just blew me away.
Yeah, a lot going on there.
Yeah, so let's get into our favorite things, mm-hmm. and we can always check in on any dislikes as well. So for you, do you have like a favorite big thing once you got to watch it that second time where you didn't see the Leku makeup lines?
I love a lot of the action sequences, and similar to The Child, which had, you know, some great stuff with the Sandcrawler, that... You know, I'll give Emma Fyfe was really excited that this had become kind of a horror, and the monster was the Mandalorian. And that sequence, I believe it's when he's going after Mayfeld, that's in the, you know, strobe sequence.
Amazing.
That I'll put that up there as one of my favorite sequences in recent Star Wars.
Yeah.
And really liked that and liked him showing. I keep saying he's playing this game on story mode. He's going easy and he's just cutting through everyone like butter, but I'm okay with that. It's fun to watch, and I like that this time around.
Yeah. I think jumping off of that, one of my two favorite things about this episode was the portrait of how the Mandalorian functions. Mm-hmm. I love action scenes when they are about a hero who is not just talented and a kick-ass fighter, but is smart.
Yeah.
And this whole episode is about the Mandalorian using his environment and his circumstances to get one up. And that's what makes him seem unstoppable.
Yeah.
Because we're introduced to this crew of scummy people.
Yeah.
And we're introduced to how they're badasses. This one has a blaster on his back. Mm. This one's the big muscle. This one throws knives from everywhere on her body, it appears. So they're all like, ooh. And they've got that real almost kind of macho, like,
yeah,
who's a bigger badass? Mm-hmm. And Mando has that, like, I am a large badass, but also I'm going to stop and look around me.
Yeah.
Unlike any of you idiots.
Yeah.
And that just makes me like the character, and it just makes the action more exciting. When you see him like physically totally outmatched by the Deveronian.
Yeah.
And then you're still going like, well, but he's going to find a way because he's going to have like James Bond moments.
I was just going to say he really reminds me specifically of like Daniel Craig Bond.
Yeah.
Of and definitely the character of James Bond has those same traits, but just like using everything. And it, like you just said, and winning with parkour and winning with a fast car and winning with this, winning in poker,
closing doors, opportune times.
So that's a great, comparison.
Yeah. The way he manipulates the lights, he manipulates just the actual situation of the tracking beacon, for the New Republic, all those things. And just is really one step ahead of everyone is so awesome.
Yeah.
And it makes the action scenes really exciting. Mm-hmm. I also just really is a part of that. Loved the scene where they assume that he is being a chicken when he's not behind them anymore.
Yes. But
he's just like, I'm going to go around and take the droids from the back. Cause that's also smarter. And it's, that might be my favorite fight scene.
Like that. Oh yeah. That's when he slides down and
Yeah.
Oh,
just taking apart those, partially just say like, look, I do live up to the legend of the Mandalorians and I really hate droids. It's a big part of my brand.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it. And I'm going to show you again. My other big thing is just hugely positive reaction to the portrait of the New Republic, because when the show was announced, there was the like, yep, New Republic's not quite, you know, up on its feet, and a lot of people are still suffering because there's chaos and confusion.
Yeah.
And there's that part of me that's like, I like that realistic story.
Sure.
And there's other part of me of like, but Leia and Mon Mothma, they're my heroes and they're working hard and I'm sure they're doing a good job. So to see this portrait of the New Republic as something that is bright, positive and powerful.
Yeah.
Like that they're so afraid of the New Republic, and to see the New Republic's like, look, we've got a nice, clean, literally bright white ship armed with these cool robots that we've made to humanely take care of prisoners. Just that you can see that they're functioning, that they're a presence. And then the fact that all of these, the people on the crew are terrified of the X-Wings are going to come for us.
Right.
There's something about that that's just sort of like super validating to being an old school fan of Star Wars, where you want the rebels to have won and be the force in the galaxy.
It's a great point because we're 5 years out, right? So even though things aren't perfect, there's got to be some kind of cohesion. And I like the threat. I like just the mere threat of them coming after. It doesn't just ruin their bank heist. It's just, it, it's, it's, it carries a weight to it. So, and they're pretty ferocious, by the way, when they do show up.
Yes, they do.
They don't waste no time. So, yeah, I think that's a great thought to have about what we saw. We saw more functioning, and then that way the people on the outskirts, the outer rim, who are still maybe feeling a little of the effects, can try to use it in a very bad manipulation. Moff Gideon, I'm sure, might be using it. Werner Herzog's the client uses it, of just like, you know, there's some truth, but they're going to really lie to manipulate. Oh, things aren't that great. When, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
It's
a
little better.
Maybe they are. Yeah. And I like that there is a sense of legitimacy to them, even from the Mandalorian, because when he figures out what's going on, it's like, that's a New Republic prison ship. Like, he didn't run across a rival gang. He was arrested.
Right.
And from the Mandalorian, with his sense of honor, using the term arrested, like, it just had a sense of legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he broke the law and he was arrested. His fate is, what's the problem?
Yeah.
No injustice has happened to him. You know, gives a sense, especially from the Mandalorian, who's been like, well, they're a joke.
Yeah.
But then, like, oh, no, they arrested him.
Yeah. I want no part of this.
Yeah. He went to prison because he did a bad thing.
Did that. Yeah.
And now you want to break him out of that. Any other big things that spoke to you, or small little details?
I mean, we got the amount of Baby Yoda I need in my life, where episode 5 sometimes was a little light on Baby Yoda. The him looking over the shoulder, Baby Yoda, kind of watching Zero come after him, was one of my favorite lengths. And then everyone's talking about the hand gesture and thinking that he did it. Wonderful.
Right.
Wonderful. And in a show where sometimes I'm looking at, I know that ship looks like it was made on a computer too much for my taste and all these kind of weird things. This little practical puppet, which occasionally gets picked up like a Cabbage Patch doll, but this puppet like has more emotion than I've seen in most performers, not just on this show, but in a lot of shows. Like,
yeah,
I'm so in on it. And so I loved those moments.
Yeah, I think there's like such great tension set up in this episode as well, whereas some of the other episodes have been very linear. And this one was like, things are obviously going to go bad, but is it that the Mandalorian is going to have his helmet pulled off? And that's when that's been successfully built up to be like, that's a huge violation. Or are they going to double cross him?
Yeah.
Or is something awful going to happen to Baby Yoda? It's so well set up that you're worried about lots of different things, which only builds up the great Baby Yoda Zero chase sequence. The peeking around the cabinet there is beautiful.
Love it.
And the looking at his hand was, I think, another great payoff for something where it's easy to go, oh, this is an episode of the week. I'm like, okay, but it's all a part of a thing that is building on previous things.
Yeah.
And if we hadn't seen that amazing scene in chapter 2, where he does use the Force and have those great expectations for, like, what is he going to do? Is he going to shove him? Is he going to just rip his head off?
Yeah.
What is Baby Yoda going to do to this droid? Can he? Does he even understand it enough?
Yeah.
All that, all of those expectations makes Baby Yoda looking at his own hand even funnier.
I'm so invested in that character. I keep saying, like, episode 4, I didn't think he'd be shot at the end of that episode. But when I'm looking through that scope, I'm like, he might.
Yeah.
And everyone gasped when he fell and Toro dropped him, you know, collectively. I went, no! In this episode, too, I'm like, Zero can't get him. Like, in my head, I know they're not going to have this droid kill him in episode 6, but I'm completely invested in that story and in that character.
Because I think we are taking on the perspective of the Mandalorian. We are sort of bonding with him. The audience is becoming like him, and we want to make sure.
Yeah,
how did you feel when Mayfeld dropped Baby Yoda?
Same. Like, and that actually was one of the best ones, because, like, the one in episode 5... It's good. I reacted to it. Grace reacted to it. But, like, it looked a little clunky. This one, almost like I wanted to rewatch, almost like a little CGI was put. I know it's weird. The puppet does a little push up to get up. and you feel. And so, yeah, that was really effective.
Yeah.
Really effective.
You take care of that baby.
Yes.
How delicate is Baby Yoda? We need to know. Another favorite thing for me, and we can talk about this a little bit more when we're talking about the big themes, and that is that the Mando laugh, that was new and amazing.
Yeah.
When he's being asked about his code and his honor, and he gives that little laugh. How did that hit you?
I like seeing Mando being more of a fully functional character. And I thought really his alone time with Baby Yoda, what was that, episode 3? Where he's having a little bit more conversation with him. And even still now, this episode ending with him saying, you know, I told you that was a bad idea. Like, it's needed for this character. If he's just a silent, I love him. His silent speaks few words, whatever, with everyone else. But the fact that underneath the helmet literally is a functional humanoid character in this galaxy.
Yeah, with lots of opinions, humor, and experiences and relationships. Yeah.
Attractions, lusts, whatever, for Natalia Tena, whatever that, you know, for whatever that reveal meant. I mean, all of that. I do like that. So it's good to hear him laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a great clickbait article that I didn't want to share on social media for spoilers, but the headline was, "Did the Mandalorian reveal the Mando had sex?" just such an awkwardly phrased headline. Delighted me. This might be in likes. This might be in dislikes. Yeah. How did you feel about the guest stars? So the guest stars have become a big part of Mandalorian.
Right.
Some of them very recognizable. Mm-hmm. And this week we had a bunch of guest stars.
Yeah.
Some venerable actors, some like Bill Burr, a comedian who you don't see on screen as an actor as often.
Right.
And then the X-Wing cameos.
Yeah.
Yeah. So were these likes or dislikes for you, or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between. You can't help but see Bill Burr every time. And I'll say this, he showed up to play. You know, I felt he took it seriously, even though he's not a huge Star Wars fan. He's talked about that, and Favreau was like, "Ah, just come on, it'll be fun." Richard Iwata, Zero, right? The voice Zero,
right?
IT Crowd, like, right. I didn't pick that one up a little bit to let, and then Clancy Brown right away.
Yeah, great Star Wars connection there.
So and the Matt Lanter one too is fun, but the Matt Lanter one, like, you didn't really initially pick up on it.
Yeah, that was great because you didn't know it was an actor playing an entirely different role.
So I don't know where to come down on this because I enjoy them. I thought Brian Posehn was actually one of the better ones. If you're not super familiar with him, you're not going to pick up on it, but he just played it. He's subtle, small moment. Whereas like the Horatio Sanz one, I'm a huge fan of Horatio Sanz. It's part of my favorite era of SNL. And he stood out. And initially was like, wait a minute, who is that? Who is that? I couldn't figure it out.
Right.
And I thought eventually, like, it's now not one of my favorite parts. No disrespect to him. I'm glad he's in Star Wars. But like it was played too real. I don't know. So sometimes it doesn't work for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wish we just had a good character actors. You know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. But I understand the appeal. If Joseph Scrimshaw is making a Star Wars TV show, I'm going to be like, hey, man, you need a bartender?
I understand that. This whole episode made me think about the nature of character actors and cameos and all of that.
Yeah.
Like, I think Bill Burr worked for me ultimately because I don't know his oeuvre entirely well. I haven't memorized. In general, that's his style of being very confrontational in comedy and the way he's made fun of Star Wars in the past, like saying, why are you lining up, you weirdos? Like, I get that it's funny and we try to have a sense of humor about that. Love that. Conan O'Brien. Triumph the comic insult dog about, but there's something about that very confrontational style of like, are you losers having joy?
Right.
How stupid. That is not personally my favorite style of comedy.
Yeah.
Because I'm a weirdo trying to find joy. But I think he did a great job by playing Bill Burr in space because he had that same just confrontational, everyone around me is kind of an idiot.
Yeah.
And I'm calling it out and I'm poking at you and teasing you and trying to, you know, get you wound up.
Right.
So I feel like he kind of ended up working for me.
Yeah.
The cameos, the X-Wing cameos, I wrestled with and I talked to my wife about the Dave Filoni cameo.
Yeah.
Because there's, on one hand, there's the, hey, Dave Filoni has contributed so much to Star Wars. Put yourself in any part of it that you want. But it made me think about the nature of cameos.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people watching this, even big Star Wars fans, don't know what Dave Filoni looks like.
Right.
But for me, it was my favorite part of the episode, the whole New Republic thing.
Yeah.
And seeing X-Wings come in. I was so in that moment. And then it's Dave Filoni.
Right.
Rocked me out of that moment. And I know for total viewership, I'm probably in the minority. But it just made me think about the nature of cameos. Like having them a little bit. If it's somebody super recognizable, having them a little bit on the side and not having them in a moment where you're thinking about something else, so your brain gets derailed by their presence.
Yeah. I was like with Grace, who doesn't know who Dave Filoni is, like, oh, that's one of the directors. And then It's like, that's the other director. Oh, that's the other director. And then I was like, well, where's a Y-wing for Bryce Dallas Howard? So while it's totally fun, and I know you think it's fun too, I he's also not a good, I mean, he's not a good actor. He's not trying to be. So that moment is downplayed. You're like, X-Wings, they're launching a ship now. Like, oh, okay.
I didn't even respond to that or even
I go that way. But
I feel like there is a tradition of varying qualities of cockpit acting throughout.
He's no Tally Lynch. Tally Lynch.
Tally Lynch is, she is the star to beat.
Yeah, but
cockpit acting.
This show is it's a cavalcade of stars, like it's a 70s celebrity showdown sports event or something. And I'm definitely okay with it overall because, again, jokes aside, but you know, if a friend of mine was making a Star Wars movie and didn't at least invite me to set to wear a stormtrooper costume, I'd be kind of mad.
But it's a question of
Becomes a lot. Yeah, it becomes a lot.
Because like Sarah and I were rewatching this weekend most of the Star Wars Skywalker saga, and paused in Return of the Jedi where Ben Burtt has his great cameo.
Right.
And I was like, hey, remember when we were talking about Dave Filoni? Yeah. What if that was George Lucas in that moment?
Right.
Would you be distracted? And she's like, yes.
Yes.
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a minor quibble. For me, it's more thinking about the nature of cameos and like, absolutely, you make something, you put yourself in it, you put your friends in it,
right?
Have fun, get in there and play. But I think it's just a personal taste of finding a way to be like, oh, this is a fun noticed moment to notice someone.
Yeah. It's just a lot. It is a lot. I mean, every week is a collection of them.
Yeah.
And again, like Mark Boone Jr. as Ran is not a cameo, it's a casting. He's just playing the same Sons of Anarchy guy he's playing in every episode, but he's good, you know. Yeah. And I bought
and Clancy Brown is like, yeah, of Clancy course. Brown's Clancy great. Brown is a great character actor, great at playing a bruiser, you know. So that all makes perfect sense. All right, well, congrats to X-Wing pilot Dave Filoni for fulfilling that lifelong dream. That is awesome. He has contributed a lot to Star Wars.
Trapper Wolf was his character's name. So.
Of course it was. Of course it was. Yes, I did see that. But the other directors, because I don't know their faces by heart, didn't take me out of it, you know? Anyway. All right, let's move on to some of the canon effects, revelations, and really just references, because there was a ton in this episode. How did you feel about the Gungan joke about there's a great helmet tension about teasing him about keeping the helmet on at all times.
Yeah.
And saying, are you Gungan under there and doing the Jar Jar impression?
I think it worked for me. It didn't hit like, ha ha. I just went, oh, okay. You're getting it in. And it's perfect that it's Bill Burr because it's probably something he said in his podcast. Anyways, I enjoyed the Canto Bite reference more. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, just because it was fresher.
More organic, where this one is like, I guess if for me, I would have stopped at, what are you, a Gungan under there? And end line, not go into a Jar Jar impersonation.
Yeah. I like bringing Gungans into the
fold. I want to see one in Rise of Skywalker. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I don't want to erase the Gungans.
Yeah, Wicket but, and his warrior friend, Ancient Jar Jar. That would be fine by me.
Yeah.
One that I appreciated and kind of assumed what it was. I loved the whole fight with the big bruiser Deveronian, played by Clancy Brown. Forgetting his name. Berg. I love that he was just taking it to Mandalorian. But the fire not working on him, I thought was a great connection to, for years, people calling, you know, the Deveronian Labria in A New Hope, the devil guy.
The devil guy.
So, like, of course fire doesn't work on the devil guy. It was like, that was one of those fun little details. Yeah. If you wanted to pick up or infer, you could, but otherwise, just cool.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the stormtrooper aim mocking?
I'm okay with that. I actually liked it. I'll tell you, I liked it because it has come up a lot in some of the new canon materials. Brendel Hux is training the First Order stormtroopers to be better shots. Like, it's been addressed, and it can be addressed in a fun way. And the fact that it's real world in a way that this has gone on, I liked it. I liked it. Again, because it was organic. It was winky, but not naughty.
Winky, but not naughty.
Yeah. Winky and naughty. N-O-D-D. So it worked.
Yeah.
Because it's been brought up before in Star Wars to me, in some of the canon stuff, so...
Yeah, and it, to me, it just worked between that banter between Mandalorian and Maeve Held of, like, they're both kind of checking each other out to see who is a badass. And that seemed like an honest thing from the Mandalorian's point of view. It was like, that's really nothing to brag about. You're sending me out with a former stormtrooper. Great. I'm going to die. And the anger about it was, funny.
Yeah.
There was more confirmation that most of the Mandalorians are just straight up dead.
That was my favorite canon revelation.
How did you feel about it?
It's great. So the exchange happened with Berg. You know, supposed to be great warriors. Then why are they all gone? And I was like, ooh, okay. So this is... But here's the thing. Here's what's interesting to me. So great, because we're waiting for this big reveal of what exactly the Great Purge is. And I don't know if it's coming in this show or something down the line, or it's just something that's just going to be there and we'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
I like that. But every episode, there is kind of this running joke now, particularly 4, 5, and 6, of at least once or twice an episode, like, so this is a Mandalorian. So everyone's hurt, and like it gets get a little tired. And so the fact that they're kind of like, what's a Mandalorian? Great warrior. Well, why are they all gone? Well, then did you know them or not? have you heard about them in lore, or are you... Or is it something real? So there's a weird tension in that, but that moment was really good. That is layering down some lore.
Yeah. I like the approach to this purge information that's just been coming out slowly and surely, but I like the firm confirmation that from the galaxy's perspective, most of the Mandalorians are dead.
Right.
And I hope to get a little bit more clear confirmation of what exactly the Empire, because that's what I think happened, that the Empire wiped them out. What happened there? You mentioned Canto Bight. That was a fun little nod. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the sort of modern canon of Mando himself in that relationship with Shion. Shion, the Twi'lek. She mocks his... This is the way.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
It was really interesting because I'm trying to, as we all try to figure out when did this don't take your helmet off thing take place or come down the pipeline for Mandalorian culture based on what we saw in the Clone Wars and everything. The fact that they've had a history and he's been around, I'm sure at some point he got lost along the way from Mandalorian culture. It seems like this was not just like 3 years ago that they were all running around, right?
No. The old days seemed like at least 10 years kind of thing.
So did he have that in his system then? Was he saying this is the way then? Was he not allowed to take his helmet off then? Possibly. Would make sense that it would. But at some point, she's aware of his code. Like, I really thought it was kind of interesting and deep when the thought of them having Baby Yoda together, and she said, you know, that I forget the exact line, that code of yours has changed you or something like that. Or, she mentions the code and I was like, okay, so this has been a part of him for a while, but what specific parts was it all play? And then it takes me down a wonderful rabbit hole of what are we going to learn about Mandalorian culture now?
Yeah.
Versus what we thought we'd learned with the Clone Wars. If that makes any sense. It was deeper than I thought for me as a fan.
Yeah. I'm continuing to feel, you know, that we need to listen to the wisdom of Yoda and unlearn what we have learned.
Yeah.
Because I think this is about whoever rescued him. Because when he, in Chapter 4, when he's being asked about his helmet by another guest star, he talks about how he hasn't taken it off since he was in anybody else's presence since he was about the age of the kids running around. So I think that this is whatever group of Mandalorians rescued him, this is their belief, their code. And just like real human cultures, I think lots of different groups of Mandalorians could have different codes.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting. It gave great tension to the Mandalorian that he clearly had some level of intimacy, whether it was physical or not, even if it was just flirting with Shien. They dangle the possibility of having sex, like that headline said.
Yes.
but he clearly still had the belief that you don't take the helmet off, that this is the way, and a very specific moral code. Because everybody asks him about his code.
Right.
That's not something that was just personal between him and Shien. So the contrast between he clearly had this code, and then it's really implied that he did some things he's not proud of.
Yes.
When Ranzer is saying, like, yeah, it was in wild times, whatever. And he's like, well, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. And when she brings up, you know, what he did, and she says, yeah, but you, I know you, you liked it. So clearly he fell in some way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is about recapturing that. So yeah, deep, deep stuff. And again, that's the thing. You go back the second time and you're like, oh yeah, shouldn't just be looking at the computer graphics.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit more in depth then about the big theme of this episode, the idea of being trapped by his armor, mm-hmm. or even his code.
Yeah.
Did you feel like, what made you feel like he is the prisoner? And it's a question of whether or not he's trapped.
It was the constant references to the past and what he did. And then again, you get the armor and the helmet and everything. But in contrast to them, still, you know, this is a Mandalorian. He's on your team. That brings you some credibility. You know, he's a fighter. He's a warrior. People. But he was using that power to do things that he clearly wasn't proud of, felt he had to. And so coming back and again, needing to go back to them for whatever reason, to get more money, to fix the ship, everything, this kind of ongoing thing. And one by one, slowly breaking out from that prison of his friends and new cohorts, because some are people he just met. And how from the beginning you get the theme of you know, it was a long time ago, to no, he has sent the New Republic after them. They also did bad things to do. I don't know if he showed up there intending to have X-Wings come after them and just do the job, let's get out. But maybe along the way, because this is what happens in real life. Oh, that person in my life is a bad, bad thing. And it took me 15 years to get to that point.
Yeah.
So you start moving away from them a little bit. I felt this was him going, I don't want to be this anymore. I can't be this anymore. I got this kid. I got this thing I'm protecting. I got a bigger purpose now. And I want to get back to where I was before maybe I ran into this crew.
Yeah.
And so one by one, he's removing himself, which leads to this decision I'd love to discuss to you at some point of why he didn't kill them.
Yes, absolutely.
And Quinn says, did you kill them? He says they got what they deserved. And the reveal that he kept them all alive, which I still don't have I still don't know what I think or what my perfect answer for that is, other than I was like, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Because they probably did deserve to die, but not not to his code.
Yeah, I was expecting them to die for sure.
So my monologue over, that was how I progressively came to, here's the theme and what I like about it.
It is a good monologue. Yeah, I think there was something that emerged for me about a picture of a younger man with something to prove. Mm. That, like, he has this code. He doesn't take the helmet off. Don't know exactly what the code is, but it seems to be, like, some amount of Mandalorian honor.
Right.
Don't shoot people in the back kind of thing. Don't kill people who don't have to be killed kind of thing.
You don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit in the wind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then there's that great exchange early on of when Rancor is saying, like, you're running with the Mandalorian, gave us some respect. And well, what did he get out of it? He used to say target practice.
Right.
That paints the picture of a violent young man who maybe does, like Shien says, enjoy the violence, has something to prove on the kind of warrior side of being a Mandalorian, which puts him in conflict with the honor side.
Yeah.
At some point, he manages to get away from this, where he clearly feels like he has really made some choices he doesn't want to.
Yeah.
Something involved with him ended up with Quinn being captured at some point. So maybe there's some amount of guilt. Maybe he's too close to Shien, whatever. He goes to the guild, and the guild seems like the cleaner version of bounty hunting, right?
Right.
And now he's even burned that.
Yeah.
And now he's in this like whole new place of like, okay, I'm maybe going to decide for myself exactly what this is the way it means for me. Is I making it through the galaxy with this kid. In his relationship with this particular crew, I really felt like he needed money. And we can talk more about that. But that he was going there with the idea of like, I don't have anywhere else to turn.
Right.
So I have to go to these scumbags. They're going to screw me. The only question is, which of these seven different ways are they going to screw me?
Yeah.
And how am I going to get around it to just get the money? And can I hold on to my code while I'm doing it?
Right.
Because he seems prepared. He still gets surprised and thrown in the prison. But he is confident that, like, I can outsmart these people. I can outfight them.
Right.
It'll be fine. Ultimately, and it is, and it's just like great fist pumping. You get to watch your hero kick ass, but then you get to that laugh. And I think for me, the laugh is something about him just sort of breaking a little bit or having like a sense of humor or irony about it he knows Quinn is trying to play him.
Yeah.
Right. And use his honor against him. And he just kind of laughs out of like the contrast between I'm trying to be honorable and absolutely no one else around me is. And you don't even know how funny it is to me. Like, I would love to kill you all.
Right.
But I didn't.
I didn't. Yeah.
Because of this code that you think is so funny and such a weakness. Mm. You know?
It's strength. Fuels him. I like that.
Yeah. So I feel like he left them alive a little bit out of kind of this classic, you know, almost superhero, like, I'm going to be better than them.
Yeah.
Because it's not wise. And he must know it's not wise. And maybe even that's part of it of like, yeah, I'm going to do the honorable thing. And screw myself by leaving you alive.
Yeah. Yeah, because I really thought he was killing Berg, right? And it's just every indication is like,
oh, yeah.
Wow, he's got a gruesome death and the door again. He loves killing people with doors.
And then the
reveal kind of threw me in a good way. Just like, okay, I like that decision. I thought that was a really good. Talking about, you know, these episodes, they're not filler if they reveal things about the character, and this revealed a lot.
I mean, he's certainly willing to kill. He's disintegrated Jawas from mild annoyance. Maybe there's something about this, like, they've challenged his identity,
and
they've challenged his honor. So, like, I didn't find myself in a kill or be killed situation.
Right.
So I did to you what you were trying to do to me, leave me locked up here.
And about the comparison to the Jawa one, which is Child, Fayuma's episode, I saw some people tweet about that, and you shouldn't be tweeting about spoilers, kids. But I saw some people like, well, where was that Mando? Like, he's burning random, he's disintegrating random Jawas out of anger, out of frustration, and here he's, number one, apparently doesn't have the pulse rifle anymore.
I meant to put that under the canon effects.
and I'm like, well, what about character growth? The Mandalorian episode 2 had not viewed himself as a father. In fact, he viewed that thing as an enemy.
Yeah.
And now he definitely has a different connection. The kid is changing his worldview. It's John Cusack and Gross Point Blank looking at a baby while Pete Townsend's Let My Love Open the Door plays. He's changing.
Yeah.
And so I have no problem with that change.
Yeah. Yeah. And a specific relationship with those people in that situation might change it as well.
Yeah.
But to echo something you said, I do love the way the episode ended because I think it was challenging him of, are you trapped in that armor? Are you trapped by your code? Can you ever be close to someone? Can you be anything but this kind of mumbly stick in the mud loner?
Yeah.
And that buddy cop moment at the end was like, here's the ball, because here's this, symbol of kindness in our relationship. Yeah. But the way he says to him, I told you this was a bad idea, but with like kind of a sense of whimsy and a sense of humor. And that was the first time I was like, no, Mando and Baby Yoda are a crew.
They're a crew.
They're in this together, you know?
I really love that last moment.
Yeah, because it gave a little bit of strange joy to the Mandalorian of like, I would rather be here parenting the weird Jedi baby thing than with the guild or with this crew.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a new way forward.
Yeah. A new way forward. And we are going to go forward to a quick break, and then we will be back to talk more of Chapter 6 of The Mandalorian.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we're back to talk more about Chapter 6 of The Mandalorian, The Prisoner. So, any big director moments? We both talked about being a fan of this director. What jumped out to you?
I mean, I will bring up again the what I call the strobe horror monster hallway scene with Bill Burr. I thought that just was, you know, if you're sitting down crafting a scene in a sequence, I thought that was really, really good. I liked the choice to really highlight him not wanting, or him being upset that it wasn't just droids he was going to kill. For it's a New Republic soldier, and that's, again, talk about code and honor, and something he wasn't there for, you know, that Mandalorian did not want to be a part of. And so to really highlight as a director, like, what do we need to tell in the story? Like, not there, not cool about killing a New Republic soldier, a right. human. I thought that was, I liked that choice.
And also the wisdom that we don't need to. In fact, it will only make things worse for us if we do the obvious stupid thing and just shoot him.
Yeah.
I feel like the consistency of tone, I really admired that it had such great tension. Mm-hmm. Kind of didn't know what was going to happen next, even though it was a heist story with some familiar beats, but that the action was great. The emotional tension was great. The comedy was great. And sort of the deafness of, like, I know every moment that I'm trying to communicate and I'm going to have all of these different tones and they're still going to blend well into an episode that really seemed like a complete package.
Yeah.
So that just kind of big picture thing of seeing the different tones of the directors and seeing how consistent this felt. Yeah. All the fights trying to both have like clarity in the fight. So it wasn't just like kind of early 2000s, mid-2000s, right. Jason Bourne, some limbs are flying.
Yep.
Everything, all of the choices and movements were really clear, and then also just some very artful shots to make you feel the fight. I loved the shot seeing Mando walk away through the giant burning hole in the droid head, which really emphasized how much this has been a part of his brand that everybody knows. Like, he always hated droids. Still hates droids. It's kind of not okay about droids.
Yeah.
And to see, like,
was he trying to be a badass and prove he was, or was he just like, droids gotta get him?
Yeah.
And just seeing that smoking hole of like, this is the way I want to see the galaxy, is nothing but smoking holes through droid heads.
Just ask IG-11.
If he ever comes back.
Yeah.
And going along with that, the escape from his prison cell, and seeing for the first time a cool action thing, that oil splatter from the droid made it visceral, made it real. We've seen many droid explosions and shootings in Star Wars, but the oil splatter made it real.
I love that sequence. That was the most Bond-like to me of what would James Bond, Daniel Craig's James Bond do if he was trapped, you know, like that. I really liked everything about it. It was really inventive, fun, showed a lot about the character. Yeah. And then, droid splatter.
Yeah.
Oil splatter spots. CSI then, teams can look into that.
Yeah. And the big fight with Berg, the knives with Xian.
Yeah.
That was really cool to see a different kind of like, well, she just throws knives from, who knew she had that many knives on her? Cool.
She had a Legolas supply of knives and arrows that just goes and goes and goes.
Yeah.
She was good. She was a good character. Over the top at times, which fits right into Star Wars for me.
Yeah. You know? Did you like seeing that different take on a Twi'lek?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I did. I did. We either see super sexualized versions of Twi'leks, and I thought that's dealt with, like Lords of the Sith actually deals with that, I thought, quite well. Or we see, the noble heroes. So this was kind of somewhere in between and deadly. And a great casting. That was one of my favorite, because that one I view more as
a great
casting.
Actor. Yeah,
that's a casting choice versus, you want to get, Tonks? You want to get Tonks in here or Osha? Yeah. No, she's a great actor, and I thought that worked for me.
Yeah, and she sold everything really, really well. And I saw good discussions of blurring the lines of the way gender has been presented in Twi'leks.
Right.
Of like, you've seen some Twi'leks be kind of like hissy and creepy, but male.
Right.
And we've had the super sexualized female Twi'leks, or like the sort of responsible leader like Hera.
Yeah.
So to see somebody like, I'm a scummy bounty hunter, and I hiss and I try to scare you, and my teeth are sharpened like some of the males, and that was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Addition to canon. And yeah, the Mando stocking is just, it was built up so well, and just directorially, love the choice to have, and the design choice to have the New Republic ship be that bright white.
Yeah. Because
it doesn't just connect to like Tantive IV. Mm. It's symbolically what they are.
Yeah.
We are bright and white and clean
and
hopeful and trying to do things the right way.
Right.
And to see our characters in that, splattering oil everywhere, but by the time the Mando has taken over, everything is flashing red.
Yes.
Oh. In his hallway of death.
You know, we've always talked about little genres and could we ever see Star Wars horror? This was an Ewok hunt on Battlefront 2 are the closest to Star Wars horror we've gotten.
Yeah, it's so great to just see those seasoned, scummy crew members who had been mocking him earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
Being like, oh man, we have no hope. Awesome comeuppance for that. Mm-hmm. All right, any action figure inspired moments that broke out to you?
I mean, the fights. The jail breakout, Mando's jail breakout was my favorite. I guess you could say Berg also throwing two droids.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, it looked a little awkward to me, but in story, I was like, that's funny. I like that. That's something you do with your figures.
Yeah. I definitely want an action figure of that New Republic droid. I thought that was like a great addition to new canon, that they had the actual, Starboard insignia on them.
Yeah.
And I would love to be able to buy nice action figure of a break apart New Republic security droid.
Falls off at the knee.
Falls off at the knee.
Oil splatter included.
Yeah. Pop head off with giant spray of oil would be great. And if this were, I want to say, about 1998, there would absolutely be a Cinema Scene 3-pack with the three directors in their flight suits.
Oh, yeah.
From the end.
Yeah. Director Squadron, Shepherd Squadron, I've heard some people call them. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
That's a good one. Grizzled weirdo moments. What popped out to you? Because we did get some new grizzled weirdos in the form of Berg in particular.
Yeah, I'll go with Mark Boone Jr. as Ranzer. Almost everything. And again, he's an actor. He's a good actor. This isn't a cameo to me at all. Since that, you know, that's part of the discussion we had this episode. Make it clear. But he chewed up every word, and it was all very real world stuff. It was a bank heist beginning. So when he was like, I don't need a driver. I need a gunner. Like, I was like, I guess that'd be in Star Wars. Sure. But it's just like he was having so much fun, just every word being like, I am a Star Wars gangster. And just I really liked it.
Yeah. His line that jumped out for me for best grizzled weirdo moment was, I don't go out anymore. he's got that long beard, the pot belly that looks more like I just really been enjoying a lot of, you know, fried yip tip. it's like, of course you don't go out anymore. But he reminded me of people that I have known in real life who are hell raisers in their youth.
Right.
And then they get to a certain age and like, nope. Now watch TV.
Yeah, there's a guy you go into like a low lit bar, and they're at the end of the bar, and they got a leather jacket on and faded tattoos that say things you don't even want to know if you think
right.
You know, yeah, and he's just yeah, give me another one. When he said, "Oh gosh," what he you know said something about you know, Mandalorian says, "Do you trust him?" He's like, "You know, I don't trust anybody," or whatever the line is. It's just like. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, but again, I loved every little bit with him.
Yeah, yeah, and he set the tone really, really well. If you knew exactly who the Mandalorian mm-hmm. was getting in bed with, in Grizzled Weirdo moment, I'll highlight it again because I loved it so much. Thought it was so new and interesting. Is that Mando laugh?
Yeah,
okay. And it was just really chilling because it was coming right off of that hallway of death, mm-hmm. and you, the audience, were wrestling with. Well, it seems like Mando maybe did something shady that got Quinn captured.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And then Quinn's trying to play on his honor, and you kind of expect him to just whip out the blaster and put a smoking third eye in his forehead.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he just laughs. Yeah. You don't know what it means. Great. It said they're going to make 100 Mando action figures. Make one with a pull string that just laughs.
Try me. Hear me laugh.
All right. Let's talk about predictions for next week. I want to throw this question out for you about the overall picture of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Are these last several episodes Mando looking for sanctuary, but then Mando just needing money?
Yeah.
Because my perception was he gave most of the money he earned in Chapter 4 by protecting the village
mm-hmm.
to Cara Dune.
Yep.
And then in Chapter 5, he was just trying to repair his ship. Paid any money he found on a body he murdered to Amy Sedaris.
Yeah. Pelimoto. Yeah.
Pelimoto. So I got almost the sense of like, he's certainly not looking for sanctuary with these people. He's looking to do one job
mm-hmm.
so he can get money to do X.
Yeah.
How did you take it?
I'll start here. I'll start where my mind's going. I don't want to ever put a demand on the show, but I'm like, let's see where that's going. Where he's clearly first it's running away, then he's willing to leave the baby behind type of thing. Now it's like, what is his, I don't know his true goal right now. And I want that. I think I've learned enough about the character that I want it to go forward. So I learn what it all is adding up to in his mind now.
Yeah.
It's changed along the way. And now I feel I need the Moff Gideons of the world to show up. I do need maybe the cloner guy, Dr. Pershing, to show back up.
Yeah.
I am now aching for that because I think they've done a great job of going, here's the journey. Because he does, it is a journey. It's not filler. It's a journey. We learn a lot about him along the way. So as far as predictions, we're going to finally, we're definitely going to get that answer about Ming-Na Wen.
Yes, we will definitely talk about that. I keep wanting him to make just a real proactive choice. And this episode did feel like I'm going to choose to really put my and Baby Yoda's necks on the line because I don't have anywhere else to turn and I need money. But I'm really hoping it's for, like, I know a guy who hides you. Yeah. Like, I think I maybe have that in my mind because that's a plot point in Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is like a, he knows some guy who disappears you.
Yeah.
and that's his plan. Yeah. But I also feel like is Moff Gideon's certainly going to come in. And I feel like Moff Gideon's got to be who they were trying to get.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever valuable extract of Baby Yoda they were trying to get.
Makes sense.
So is that going to be that Moff Gideon just finds the Mandalorian wherever he is?
Yeah.
Or is it the Mandalorian's going to try to hide? He's going to be found? Or if he's going to go proactively realize,
right?
Okay, I gotta end whoever's coming after Baby Yoda. I'll never be able to rest.
I gotta face him down. I like the face him down thing. Running, hiding doesn't seem right anymore. It did going into four.
Yeah.
Now, yeah.
So maybe that money is for a jetpack.
Get that jetpack. Like,
that's the last thing I need.
Get that jetpack.
Get that jetpack, and that's going to be it for Moff Gideon.
Yeah. but I do really like your idea of him seeking the right kind of help, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's Cara Dune Returns. Maybe it's... Maybe all the people we've known along the way.
It could be that he's like, yeah, Quill, Cara Dune, mm-hmm. I'm putting together a crew. the other thing is I continue to wonder if in this season or next, this is going to some Blues Brothers moment. Mm. Because let's see if I have my list. I made a list of everyone that he has pissed off.
Oh, yeah.
So he's pissed off the Imperial Warlords, the Guild itself, those Klaatunian Raiders,
right.
If they have more Raiders around, possibly Fennec Shand herself, and then now Rancer and his crew that have explicitly been left alive. Right. I think it might be something about this being made by Favreau and Filoni, steeped in a very 80s sensibility of what is cool, both in Star Wars and just kind of in life that, you know, he's going to end up in a Trans Am at some point. Yeah. I mean, it's so space, 80s. I wonder if it will at some point be like the Mando's like, oh, damn, I got half the galaxy after me.
It's the Seinfeld finale of everyone they've wronged along the way coming back to put them in a bad spot. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is we're staring down two episodes left.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to return the most? Because who knows if it's just a mystery of the way it was promoted. But certainly Cara Dune was very much put forward as one of the main characters. IG-11 has been in a ton of the promotional material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like Ming-Na Wen is going to be in another. Fennec Shand is going to be in another episode. So who do you need to return?
Quill might be the answer, but I don't think it makes sense. Cara Dune makes the most sense, and it's just something I'd like to see. Again, I'd like to see Gina get a chance to grow into that role as a performer, so that works. Ming-Na Wen's Fennec Shand is really intriguing. Like, I really don't believe she died. And the feet, the mystery of the feet, all those things, you know, maybe I need that answered more than anything, but story-wise or just... Mando needs a friend-wise, Cara Dune does work for me. But also the rest of the Mandalorians.
Yeah.
And the armor and all those people. I'm not expecting them to all show up again and, hey, we're fighting with you again. But the armor is an interesting character, too.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know a little bit more about her.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Probably a victory that we want to spend more time with almost all of the characters that we've briefly met.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but I would love him to go round up Quill and Cara Dune and put together his weird ragtag of
and Quill
morally
could,
solid people.
Quill could be like, I went and replaced, fixed that droid you shot.
Yeah. I think that's, if IG-11 comes back in, I think it's because Quill was like, well, I'll put some...
put a new head on him.
I got him doing farming for me. It's great. Let's close out our predictions by talking about the mystery of the boots. Did you feel okay that we didn't get an answer to whose boots are they other than... doesn't appear to be the Mandalorian.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we got one candidate cut from the list. Absolutely. When the episode didn't begin with the same shot, you know, I was like, oh, okay, we've got another adventure. We're somewhere else.
Yeah.
Unless Mark Boone Jr. was the one who did it. But so we're going to get that answer. I'm still weirdly on a Boba Fett kick, but somehow Moff Gideon seems more realistic at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pulling for the old Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Let's get his feet and the rest of Boba Fett back in action.
And again, we talked about this going last week, but like we, you and me always were like, what is the emotional purpose of bringing back Boba Fett? I don't know, other than the found Mandalorian culture idea and some deeper themes in there. I don't know. It's just one of the times I'm just because.
Yeah. And to me, there's rich storytelling to be had with what does it mean to be, you know, kind of a clone, but not really in his path through the galaxy. It could be all great, juicy stuff. We've been getting a bunch of questions for people asking us to talk about this on our main show, but we're trying to keep main show Mandalorian spoiler free. So we got two questions here about the Mandalorian. One comes from Stephen Kirkpatrick, and Stephen says, over Thanksgiving, I had about a dozen family and friends ask me where Mandalorian falls in the Star Wars timeline. Do you think it is clear enough for the casual fan, or should the show have done more to clarify where this falls in the timeline? For example, several of my friends thought Baby Yoda was actually Yoda and didn't understand that was just the internet's name for the child. Thanks. Ken, what do you think about clarity?
It's a great question, Stephen. It might be needed. It's the old thing of story I tell of seeing Rogue One at a screening, the lady next to me looking at the promo photo and thinking Jin was Rey. Again, you know, you cast brunette English girls, that might happen a lot. But there's something to be said for giving a little bit more other than a subtle reference of the New Republic.
Yeah.
And the fall, the Battle of Endor. There's enough there, but I don't know how I need it. If beginning of the show, not a crawl, but a lower third bumps up 5 years after the fall. I guess, but it's I'm sure this is not Stephen and his family aren't the only ones having this discussion, especially with the internet running wild with Baby Yoda.
Yeah, and I think that there's the Baby Yoda thing. There's probably just no way around right now because the show is specifically having us have this discussion of we don't know the character's name, we don't know the species name, and we don't know if we will know. We don't know if that's where it's going. But I think Solo, the movie Solo, was for me the best choice. Because Rogue One just chose like, oh, a crawl is for the main saga, so we're not doing that. And they just presented it in the actual text in a different way. Mm-hmm. In a way that didn't feel disruptive to the story they were telling.
Yeah.
I think it connected to the idea that Star Wars has a sense of storytelling, even if everything isn't going to say a long time ago, still is a little bit set in that world. And the Solo one also, it kind of set it in time, but it also didn't nerd out about it. It wasn't like, hey, so you don't have to explain this to your uncle. This is set 10 years before, 13 years before, blah, blah, blah. It said, here is the state of the galaxy and therefore emotionally how it would affect a young man trapped on an industrial world.
Yeah.
And I think something like that would have been great for Mandalorian. I'd be happy if every episode started with, you know, the Empire has been overthrown, but as the New Republic sets up their government, much in the outer rim of the government of the galaxy, is still chaos. You know, and all must find their way, all must find who they want to be. Like, so it gives you like a little sense, and then it also just kind of emotionally ties you into like, this is what's at stake.
The crawls being such a tradition, you don't need the crawls. The Solo one is a great example because I really thought they learned a little lesson from Rogue One. That was a hit. The cold open's great, but it was a hit. People had to kind of play catch up for the fans. So it's not out of, it's Star Wars. A crawl or any kind of verbiage at the beginning, letting you know, it's not going to be like, what? So I do maybe next year.
Yeah.
Or maybe Kenobi.
Yeah. Kenobi definitely needs, I think, some people to help out, needs to help people out with some clarity. And Clone Wars has a great newsreel approach.
That works,
No, so I think there are a lot of different ways to approach the spirit of the crawl, and I'm all for it, Stephen. Yeah. Let's make talking to relatives easier. Right? Why not? All right. Our next and last question is from Mario Jansen. How will the Mandalorian's face be revealed in the show? Will it just be smooth-looking Pedro Pascal with his signature mustache? Or will he be scarred, beaten, and battle-hardened? Will he have a buzz cut or some wild haircut in line with the face reveal of Kylo Ren and TFA? Maybe a gruff beard? Thanks for the always great content, and may the Force be with you all and the one that has spoken. what are you thinking about that, about face reveal?
I think we are going to get it, even though now it's kind of out there that Pedro's not really in the costume, the outfit for most of it. They did reveal some behind-the-scenes stuff. I think just a little distraction to you seeing what the actual casting was, but I think we will. And it's a great question. I want clean shaven and buzzed because in my head that means the Mandalorian takes his helmet off on his own and shaves. You know, he eats.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah, he doesn't stick a feeding tube up there.
Because he says in episode 4, when's the last time he took it off? Last night. This is a daily occurrence. So I like it. I want a clean shaven Red Viper.
Yeah. I was going to say 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go for beard.
I like that.
For one reason only. Not a full bushy beard, just enough of a beard. Enough of a beard that Baby Yoda can grab it and pull on it.
All right, change my answer to that.
And this is a fascinating question because the trailer for Wonder Woman came out.
Yeah.
And Pedro Pascal is in it very clean shaven and looking different.
Yes.
Playing the character Maxwell Lord, or Maxwell Lordian, if you want to go full Mandalorian comparison. So the versatility of his face, I think, is a discussion in pop culture right now. I hadn't really thought about because I felt like, of course, eventually we'll see his face.
Yeah.
And I think we've heard rumblings of that. But now that it has been made so much that this is the way.
Yeah.
Are you feeling like the audience is going to get to see his face? Are you feeling he is going to choose to reveal himself? And if so, who is he going to reveal himself to?
I mean, the answer's in front of our faces, right? It's got to be Baby Yoda.
It feels like Baby Yoda, right?
Yeah, it's got to be. Now what I want. I'm not going to lock in expectations, but yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Revealed to him.
Yeah.
Mm.
There's our big prediction. There final shot is Baby Yoda tugging on the Mandalorian's beard.
Yep.
we always end with a weird question inspired by the chapter. So, Ken, if you had a button that called the New Republic to swoop in and kick ass, when would you use it?
I'm not one of those, I hate LA because of traffic guys. I actually love living in this city. I've been here 21 years now. Love it. I actually miss the traffic when I go home. But there are times when you're stuck on the side of a hill. If you take a road like Laurel Canyon or Barham or Coldwater Canyon, yes, I sound like a Californian sketch, but you sometimes just want the path cleared. Not anyone's fault up there. I'd be the bad guy. But, there's a spy up there in that Subaru.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is somebody's fault.
Sometimes it is.
Somebody makes a little bit of a selfish choice of like, what if I just pulled out in front of everyone at the perfect angle to block three lanes of traffic?
Don't talk to me about left turns at uncontrolled intersections.
Mine is an emotional answer that is not practical. But, man, you and I have both experienced it. This is an L.A. thing as well, up to a point. It's a universal experience. But being at the Hollywood Bowl and having people talk loudly because they think they're somehow in an open-air environment, it's cool. But, man, I would love to be at a concert and just dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. X-Wing swoops in, lowers right above somebody's head. The cockpit opens and somebody's just like, shut up.
It basically affected, I won't say ruined, but affected my Game of Thrones concert experience the last time out. I just purchased some tickets, swiped a credit card on a 90s rock and roll bonanza show in June of next year.
Oh, yeah.
Liz Phair, my favorite artist. Not female. I don't want to divide that category. She's what, top five artists for me of all time. Alanis Morissette and Garbage. I am dying to go. And as I purchased these tickets, I didn't have the full funds. So that's why I swiped a credit card to go to a higher level, because I was hoping if I spent more money, no one else would be talking around me.
Yeah.
I fear that's going to not be the case. Now I'll call in Dave Filoni to kill everybody.
Yeah, what is it? Trapper Wolf.
Trapper Wolf
will tell people to shut up at the Hollywood Bowl. That's one of the many things we got out of this episode of The Mandalorian. We have spoken.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.